You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And the Jimmy Butler standoff is finally over. And unfortunately, not in the best way for those of us in Houston. Welcome in to a Saturday episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben DuBose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. The Rockets are a few hours from tipping off in San Antonio, the first of two games in barely over 24 hours. They're in San Antonio Saturday night, then they have the short flight back home to Houston before playing the Pacers on Sunday night. So it's a back-to-back, but at least not a lot of travel in between. But we're coming to you now on Saturday afternoon because sometimes there is news aside from the games that can impact the Rockets, and that's what happened today with the news first reported by Shams Charania of The Athletic that the Minnesota Timberwolves, after an awkward dance that's gone on for months now, are trading Jimmy Butler, but not to the Houston Rockets, instead to the Philadelphia 76ers in a package headlined by forwards Robert Covington and Dario Saric, also guard Jared Bayless, and a 2022 second-round pick for Butler and forward Justin Patton. So for the Rockets, who have definitely been pursuing Jimmy Butler, as reported by many sources, with packages ranging from Eric Gordon Plus to the most recent iteration, which would have been four first-round draft picks, as reported by Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, ultimately none of them were enough to tempt the Pacers to trade him to Houston, instead sending him to Philadelphia in the Eastern Conference. If nothing else, I think you can take some satisfaction that with Butler being a top 10 or top 15 type player, at least he's going to an Eastern Conference team and leaving the West, because as strong as the Western Conference is, it's nicer to see the Timberwolves presumably take a step back, at least from the form they were when healthy a year ago, which was one of the top three, top four teams in the Western Conference. They've been nowhere near that to start this season, I believe 4-9, but of course a large part of that has had to do with the drama and the bickering that's been present really ever since Butler reported to training camp in late September and all the awkwardness that came with trying to keep a player who publicly wanted out. So for the Rockets, there's a reason why they wanted to trade for Jimmy Butler. I don't know that it's necessarily a short-term blow, because for the Rockets, they're 4-6. It's a very disappointing start through 10 games, but the reasons they're 4-6, look, they rank 27th in the league offensively right now. Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, they're not giving you anywhere near what they did a year ago or what the Rockets' internal projections had them at. So really, when you look at why they've started 4-6, between the offensive struggles, the injuries to James Harden and James Ennis, the suspension to Chris Paul, I don't think the Rockets should be this bad anyway, and assuming they're healthy, these problems should largely rectify themselves. I don't think that not getting Jimmy Butler is a short-term blow for this team to where you should feel a lot worse about them today relative to how you felt yesterday. The acquisition potentially of Jimmy Butler would not have been a band-aid. Where Jimmy Butler comes into play is closing the gap with Golden State, which has started so well this season as expected, and that's before they've even added DeMarcus Cousins, yet another all-star, to a lineup that, in my opinion, is probably already the most talented in the history of the NBA. Warriors off to another 10-2 start, differential plus 10.7, and it was a lot more than that before they took it on the chin against the Bucks the other night in a game in which there was no Steph Curry and Draymond Green. So for the Rockets, acquiring Jimmy Butler and their pursuit of him, it was not so much about the short term, in my opinion. It was always about the long term. The fact that even a year ago, it took so many things lining up before the Chris Paul hamstring injury to give yourself a chance against the Warriors. They had to muck it up in Games 4 and Game 5 of the Western Conference Finals. And even if the Rockets are able to recapture the form they had a year ago, even if they add a 3-and-D type at the deadline, buyouts, whatever it may be, then you still need a lot of things to go your way when you have two presumed top 10 talents, James Harden and Chris Paul, and they have four All-Stars and now a fifth if DeMarcus Cousins comes back healthy from the Achilles injury. So to me, Butler was always more of a long-term play in terms of increasing your upside, because for the Warriors, the problem is that the margin of error when you are playing Golden State is just so small, because when you have that amount of All-Stars, it's not that there's no route to victory, but the margin of error is so very small. If you go through even a slight slump like we're seeing right now from the Rockets and Chris Paul, it feels massive because you don't have all the other All-Stars waiting in the wings to chip in. There's James Harden, and then there's nothing else. So that's where it's really the long term where the impact of not getting Jimmy Butler comes into play. He was an acquisition to get the Rockets closer to parity with Golden State and their depth of top-tier talent. And so from that standpoint, it is a loss. However, I would caution to read too much into it because we're in mid-November now. There's a long way to go until the trade deadline, and there are going to be other star players that are at least somewhat on the market. Now, we'll see if any actually get dealt, but there have been lots of star players that have been dealt for just in the past 18 months. We'll recall some of those examples as we make our way through this show, but I don't think this is the only situation for the Rockets. I think now they move on down the list to whatever their next targets are, and we'll see over the next 3 months if the Rockets can strike deals for any of them. Now, as far as why the Rockets couldn't close a deal for Jimmy Butler, because before we turn the page to what's next, I think we need to wrap up what happened here. It seems pretty simple to me. Minnesota wanted more of a win-now return than what the Rockets could give them. I don't even know that it had that much to do with the Rockets being another Western Conference playoff team. I don't think it was so much that Minnesota was refusing to deal with Houston. It's just based on the return they accepted, not even getting a single first-round draft pick, and the fact that Tom Thibodeau was always a coaching hire, and not just coaching, of course, he's president of basketball operations as well. That was about winning now, giving Karl-Anthony Towns a Supermax extension, Robert Covington, Dario Saric. Those are two win-now pieces. And I don't buy the idea that, well, if it was an Eastern Conference contender but not the Rockets that was offering four first-round picks, then magically the Timberwolves would have gone the complete opposite direction and decided to rebuild. No, I think it's pretty clear from this move. I don't think that, well, if they'd gotten one more first-round pick or if it was a team instead of Houston, that somehow it would have completely changed their calculus in terms of their outlook on are they trying to win now or not. No, it seems pretty clear that for whatever reason, and you can question their strategy if you want. You can make a pretty compelling argument that with Karl-Anthony Towns as your best player, now a bunch of role players but no stars around him, that they might be capped best case in the 45 to 50 win range and ultimately upper middle class mediocrity. What does that really mean for you? You're free to make that argument, but I don't really think that if you're judging what the Rockets did, that there's anything they could have done more. Because if the Timberwolves want a package headlined by Robert Covington and Dario Saric, I don't think the Rockets could match that. Even if they were willing to give up both Eric Gordon and P.J. Tucker, and I'm not sure that would have been a wise decision, as I've said for a while, look, Eric Gordon's going to turn 30 this year, and P.J. Tucker is already 33. Covington's 27, and Saric is 24. So on a lot of levels, that package, I'm not even sure if Gordon and Tucker are that much better, especially when you consider the ages. And then you factor in the fact they're not going to win a title this year, and then the fact that those two guys from Philadelphia going to Minnesota are in their 20s, then ultimately, in terms of helping over the next 2-3 years, that deal from Philadelphia was just better. Now, I'm not saying that it's 100% the right track for Minnesota. You can definitely mount an argument that they would have been better off rebuilding if your goal is to actually win a title, but not all franchises are about that. And when you look at it through the prism of apparently the Timberwolves just wanting to stay afloat and be a fringe playoff team for the foreseeable future, then ultimately this was just the deal that made the most sense. And short of including both Gordon and Tucker with the picks, and I don't even know if that would have been enough from just a player standpoint in terms of Covington and Saric versus Gordon and Tucker, then ultimately there's not a whole heck of a lot the Rockets could have done. And then even if theoretically Minnesota would have accepted that offer, which I'm skeptical of on a comparative basis, I'm not sure it would have made sense for the Rockets because they do value P.J. Tucker quite a bit. Even at 33 years old, he remains one of the league's best and most valuable defenders. And between those two guys, when they're healthy, Eric Gordon and P.J. Tucker will play 65, sometimes 70 minutes in the game. Jimmy Butler would have played 36 to 38. So there's a huge minutes gap there with a Rockets team that's already struggling to fill out minutes from the bench. So I'm not even sure it would have been a wise move, even if Minnesota would have taken that to trade 65 to 70 minutes of production in terms of two guys that were a key part of your Western Conference Finals team, your 65-win juggernaut from a year ago for Jimmy Butler. I don't think it would have been a great move for the Rockets, even if Minnesota would have taken it, and I'm not convinced that Minnesota necessarily would have taken it. I'm not saying that's the right decision, but ultimately, I don't think it had a lot to do with Houston being in the West. I don't think it had a lot to do with wanting to ship Jimmy Butler to one particular team or another. I think it seems clear, based on the package they took, that Minnesota wanted the best pieces to help them win now and stay afloat, and ultimately, two guys, 24 and 27 years old, with relatively stable contract situations, it was going to be tough for the Rockets to match that package. It sucks, but it is what it is. Now, where do the Rockets go from here? That's what we'll talk about momentarily. Now, as we continue our way through our post-Jimmy Butler trade podcast, Butler going to the Philadelphia 76ers in a package headlined by former Rocket Robert Covington. Wow, I'm sure the Rockets wish they could undo that waiver from, I believe, 2014 when they let him go and Dario Saric. Ultimately, as I said, I don't think there's a lot the Rockets could have done differently based on the package that Minnesota opted to take. Maybe you could argue including both Eric Gordon and P.J. Tucker, but I'm not sure that would have been enough, and I'm also not sure that would have been in the best interest of the Rockets as a basketball team right now. As far as what the roadmap is from here, first and foremost, the Rockets just need to play better basketball. In terms of Jimmy Butler, if he's going to help you compete with Golden State, well, he's not going to do that unless Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, to a small extent, Clint Capella, get themselves figured out. This is a team right now that ranks 27th in the league in offensive efficiency. Last year, they were one of the best of all time. So Jimmy Butler would not have been a cure-all here in Houston. He's a guy that makes sense if he can put you over the top. In terms of getting the Rockets back to a contending level, whether they acquired Jimmy Butler or they didn't, it's always going to be about Chris Paul recapturing his form from a year ago, whatever's going on with him now, be it hopefully injury or mental related or mechanical, as opposed to any sort of impact of aging. Now at 33 years old, year 14, we discussed this on our Thursday night show, our recap after the Oklahoma City loss, but getting Chris Paul straightened out, getting Eric Gordon first healthy and then beyond healthy, playing better after a woeful start to the year, getting Clint Capella back in terms of switching on the perimeter to the form he was on a year ago when the Rockets switching defense was at its peak. Whether you acquired Jimmy Butler or not, those were and are the top priorities for the Rockets, because even if you had Jimmy Butler, you're not going to be a contender unless the vast majority, if not all of those things, are figured out and those guys start playing up to expectations, quite frankly, the way they did a year ago and the way that the Rockets' internal brain trust had slated them to perform all of their projections for this current season. That's the far and away top priority beginning Saturday night in San Antonio, and that doesn't change with the move. That said, even if those guys do figure themselves out, there's still a reason the Rockets were pursuing Butler. As we explained earlier, even if everything works out, the Warriors, they're the standard, the two-time defending champions, most talented team ever assembled. Now they've added DeMarcus Cousins as well. They simply have a much greater margin of error than the Rockets, who, with Chris Paul and James Harden, they got two top 10 players in the MVP, but it's not the same as having five all-star players. That's what Jimmy Butler would have done. It would have brought you closer to parity from the standpoint of, if Chris Paul has a rough couple of games, the margin of error is not so small that all of a sudden it puts the Rockets squarely behind the eight ball, because there's not the other depth of contributors that can reasonably be expected to step up and, at least over a short period of time, fill that gap. That is the biggest difference between the Rockets and the Warriors. And even before this slow 10-game start to the year, in which the Rockets are 4-6, that was still present. So the reason the Rockets going after Jimmy Butler, it was always about the long term. It was never about the temporary Band-Aid effect. So while the Rockets, I'm sure, are a little disappointed, I don't think they see it as anything devastating, because in terms of actually having a chance against the Warriors, that was always dependent on the team you have in April. So even if this is the only star that's on the market right now in mid-November, there is a lot of time to go before we get to even the trade deadline in early February. There's a lot of situations that can change around the NBA, and ultimately that's what I think the Rockets are going to be monitoring. Because I know there's a lot of fans that look at this and Jimmy Butler's the only star on the market now, and since there's no concrete name that could theoretically be traded for today, it's easier for some fans to just close the book. In reality, with NBA executives, it's an open and ongoing dialogue at all times. Situations can change, especially over the course of weeks and months, as situations evolve. And that's what I think the Rockets are going to be monitoring in the weeks and months ahead. Because think back just over the last 15 months or so. Before this situation with Jimmy Butler, there was Kawhi Leonard and the Spurs. Before Kawhi Leonard and the Spurs, there was Carmelo Anthony and the Knicks. This is back when Carmelo was largely seen still as a star player. Before the Carmelo situation with the Knicks, there was Paul George with the Pacers. Before Paul George with the Pacers, there was Chris Paul with the Clippers. All of these are star players in less than a year and a half that have been traded. We're not even talking free agency here. We're talking about traded based on some sort of inflection point in their contracts, and the teams, rather than potentially lose them for nothing in free agency, choosing to accept a deal that is better than the risk of them departing for no compensation. So Jimmy Butler is not the first, and he's far from the last. There will be other stars with inflection points. Who knows what happens, for example, with New Orleans and Anthony Davis. Now, I know New Orleans being a rival of the Rockets in the West, I don't know how willing they would be willing to play ball with Houston. But the point is, there are always ongoing situations around the league, and some of them aren't even necessarily about contracts. To some extent, it can be like the Washington Wizards, for example, who have a fairly talented roster. You look at guys like John Wall, Bradley Beal, Otto Porter Jr., but they're 2-9 with a point differential of -10.2. Something in that mix is not working. So sometimes it may not even be the contract where a player can leave for zero compensation. Sometimes it'll be a team that, for whatever reason, is just dramatically underachieving expectations and wants to shake things up. But Jimmy Butler, I know it hurts because he's the only name that's on the market right now, but he is not the only name, in my opinion, that will be available, at least theoretically, by the deadline. And ultimately, as far as the Rockets are concerned, competing with Golden State, they have until April 15th to put that ideal roster together. Now, it probably needs to be by February, at least from a transaction standpoint, just because of the trade deadline and factors related to that, buyouts and the fact that they need to be bought out before March 1st, those sorts of things. But generally speaking, where Jimmy Butler would have helped you is in the end game. It's not so much about the Band-Aid effect, and so that's why the Rockets, while I think they would have liked Jimmy Butler, at the same time, it's not like it's over. They will go on down the list. They will look at other stars with contracts coming up in the next couple of years. They will look at situations like the Wizards, where maybe the mix is getting very odd and the team may want to hit the reset button. And if there's something positive that we can take from these negotiations between the Rockets and Wolves for Jimmy Butler, we have learned that the Rockets, both in terms of draft capital and financial capital, they are willing to go all in. They realized that when they gave a 33-year-old Chris Paul a $160 million contract for 4 years, they're different than most other NBA teams. Their window is inherently now. Because even with picks being late in the first round, if everything pans out, it's almost unheard of to give a package with four first-round draft picks. That's Brooklyn-Boston territory from the ill-fated Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce trade from a few years ago. Now, again, I don't think that's really an apples-to-apples comparison with Jimmy Butler or any other star in the market because, number one, Brooklyn, even with adding those two, they weren't on the level of the Miami Heat with the big three. And secondly, those were guys in their mid-30s, so they're already kind of on the decline anyway. I don't think that's an apples-to-apples comparison if the Rockets give up four first-round picks for a guy that's an actual star in the prime of his career. But generally speaking, the Rockets' willingness to do that and Tillman Fertitta's apparent willingness to pay Jimmy Butler the max next summer to pay the luxury tax for the foreseeable future, if that's what it takes for this version to contend, all of those things are positive signs. Because the reason I think, to go back a year ago, the reason it felt so debilitating when the Rockets didn't close the deal for Carmelo Anthony and instead he went to the Oklahoma City Thunder, and this is back when a lot of folks were still thinking that Carmelo was a star, the reason it felt so bad is that the Rockets, for various reasons, they weren't really giving up a lot of assets in that deal. They were trying to take advantage of a leverage situation in which Carmelo, with a no-trade list, he wanted to go to Houston. That really diminished what the Knicks could get in return. And then his contract with his early termination option being potentially just 1 year from expiring, the Rockets were basically hoping to take advantage of a leveraged situation. Ultimately, the Rockets, and even now it's still a similar story, they don't have that many assets because when you think of, say, a team that's trading a star player, a lot of times it makes the most sense to not go the route the Timberwolves did, but instead try and get as many draft picks, prospects as you can to build for the next generation. Well, the Rockets are at a disadvantage on a number of levels because if you're a winning team, you probably don't have any prospects in the pipeline because you've been picking late in the first round. And because you're expected to be a winning team for the foreseeable future, then your first round picks are projected to be late in the first round. So that kind of diminishes the value of them a little bit, unless you're willing to say package four together, which the Rockets are. And then also, because you're a winning team, you probably don't want to trade away too many players that are currently responsible for you winning. Now, I know the Rockets have had a disappointing 4-6 start to the year, but again, this is a 10-game blip, and injuries and suspensions have had a lot to do with that. By and large, this is still the talent of a team that won 65 games a year ago and was a hamstring away from winning the entire enchilada and knocking off probably the most talented team ever assembled. So it puts you in a tough spot if you're a contender like the Rockets because you don't want to take away players that are helping you win now for a fit that you don't know about yet. And in terms of picks and prospects, because you're a good team, the odds are, unless you're Boston and you have that rare, like a Brooklyn deal, in which you somehow also have top-shelf draft picks, you're probably in a disadvantaged position from a trade perspective as well. And by the way, Boston acquiring Kyrie Irving, that's another trade that we can add to the list. I forgot about that one earlier. That's another star that just within the last year and a half has been dealt. And I'm sure there will be more. Point is, Jimmy Butler, he's the hot name now, but he is far from the only one. Anyway, what we have learned in this process, the willingness to give up four first-round picks, the willingness of Tillman Fertitta to pay to keep it together, even a supermax deal for Jimmy Butler that would have dramatically increased the Rockets' luxury tax bills, that reduces many of the concerns that might otherwise keep the Rockets from being in the game for other star players. Because all of a sudden, if the Rockets are willing to trade Eric Gordon and future first-round picks, as many as four, that's a pretty compelling offer for a lot of guys around the league. And I think given the Rockets' specific situation with the Chris Paul contract, whereas a lot of teams, that would just simply be an unacceptable risk to give up that many first-round picks moving forward. In addition to giving the first-round picks, you're also surrendering all sorts of trade flexibility because of the rule that you can't trade consecutive first-round picks moving forward. Basically, your 2020, your 2022 picks would also be off-limits and potential trade offers. The fact that the Rockets are willing to do that, that opens up a lot more doors. Now, that's not to say that the Rockets are going to be willing to give up four future first-round picks for everyone. Just because they do it for Jimmy Butler, two names I tossed out earlier, I don't think that, say, they'd go to the Wizards and offer four first-round picks for Bradley Beal or Otto Porter. They're not nearly the same level of player. But you do have at least some first-round capital you're willing to surrender. You do have contracts, you know, even if the player isn't worth giving up Eric Gordon, well, you do have Brandon Knight as a $15 million a year salary filler that at 26 years old has some upside, not nearly as much of an albatross as a 30-year-old $20 million Ryan Anderson. There are ways that the Rockets can put together decent packages. Now, it hurts because Jimmy Butler is a top 10, worst case, top 15 player that got away, and so I get the sting, but it's not as if all of a sudden, well, now the Rockets are just doomed to just run it out with the current roster, and it is what it is. No, other guys are going to be available. And the small silver lining that we can take from this is that we know the Rockets, both from a draft capital perspective and a financial capital perspective, they are committed to making it work. So to me, that is a small positive that you can take from this. I don't know who the next target is, but as we move our way through the weeks and months, as we get closer to the February trade deadline, I do think there are going to be other situations around the league, be it contractually related or standings related, that come to a head. And if there's one thing we've learned throughout this process, the Rockets being as willing to go as far as four future first-round picks and re-signing Jimmy Butler at the Supermax over $30 million a year, the Rockets will be ready and waiting to pounce. And if they do that, even if it takes until February, then yes, there is still a golden opportunity to shrink the gap relative to the Warriors. Now, all that said, I realize that in terms of making another trade, closing the gap with the Warriors, that's pie in the sky talk right now for a team that's 4-6 and ranked 27th in the league offensively. They're a bottom tier team defensively as well, I believe, bottom 10, but that was somewhat expected with losing Trevor Ariza and Luke Bambute, integrating some new pieces, and then the injuries, depth taking a hit. I think people expected somewhat of a slow start defensively, but to see them go from an all-time elite offense to one that's struggling to get anywhere near 100 points, yeah, that's jaw-dropping. And while we can say that on paper it should work out, I do think there's more evidence that we've heard in the last couple of days that Chris Paul's dealing with some sort of injury to his shooting elbow. There's reasons to think Eric Gordon's questionable tonight. All evidence suggests that when he's healthy, he should be fine. His shooting should bounce back, and hopefully he returns to the fringe all-star level player he was a year ago. He's just 29 years old, so there shouldn't be any aging effects going on with Eric Gordon. All of that is what should happen. It doesn't guarantee. Sometimes players do, even at a weird age, a not normal fall-off age, I should say, suffer a dramatic decline. Think back to Ty Lawson a few years ago. We said early in the year when he started poorly in 2015 that he's not even 30 years old. Why would he have this dramatic fall-off? Well, he did, and it wasn't just the fit in Houston. He's out of the NBA now. Sometimes it happens that way. Now, Ty Lawson had some off-court issues going on with the DWIs that I don't think are relevant or anything close to that for the Rockets right now, so I'm not throwing anyone out as a comparison to the Ty Lawson situation, just using that as an example of a case study in which a player was dealing with something that even if he didn't fit the normal aging curve at the same time, no, he didn't bounce back, even though on paper there was every reason to think that he would. It's not a given that the Rockets are going to bounce back. And if you are pessimistic after this start and now a team that's not just 4-6, but bottom 10 in the league on both offense and defense, while personally I'm inclined to believe that the data will win out, that guys like Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, even Clint Capela will revert back to the players that they were a year ago and were expected to be for this season. If you don't, a 10-game sample out of 82 is not insignificant. I understand where you're coming from. But what I don't like is the panic over not making a Jimmy Butler trade from that segment of the Rockets fan base. That's what's confounded me. Because if you are panicking over this Rockets team, I don't think a Jimmy Butler trade makes a lot of sense. Because if you're giving up four future first-round picks and potentially Eric Gordon, hell, let's say you could get it done without Eric Gordon. It seems clear the Timberwolves turned that down. Well, if that's not enough, and if you believe the issues with Chris Paul and Eric Gordon aren't going to resolve themselves, then even adding Jimmy Butler is not going to make you anywhere near the level of the Warriors. It's all conditional, whether you get Butler or not, on these guys turning it around to where they were a year ago. And if they don't, well, what you've done by trading for Jimmy Butler, yeah, you might secure yourself as a 50s win playoff team, but ultimately, you're going nowhere, and you've lost all your flexibility moving forward. You can't make future trades. You don't have draft picks moving forward, and you're set up for a slow decay. So, and that's just giving up the draft picks. Imagine if you throw in Gordon and or Tucker into the mix with those first-round picks. Well, then, all of a sudden, you still don't have any trade assets. You've lost the majority of your draft capital moving forward, and you also don't have anyone on your current roster that you can really offer around the league that would be desirable if you need to change things up moving forward. So, while I don't think you should be panicking now as a Rockets fan, at the same time, if you are, I understand where you're coming from. 10 games is not an insignificant sample size. We're basically 1/8 of the way through the season at this point, nearly 15%, and I understand where you're coming from. We'll be 12 games out of 82 by a little over 24 hours from now. So I'm not meaning to diminish your concerns, but the reason I am pointing this out is that if you are gravely concerned, then I don't know that it makes sense to go all in for Jimmy Butler, because all that would do basically would just be a band-aid to make sure that for the foreseeable future, you stay in 50 to 55 win range. If you are actually concerned about, say, Chris Paul at 33 years old having a significant fall-off, if you think Eric Gordon has lost it, if you think Clint Capella isn't playing with the same edge after getting the fat contract in the offseason, if you're worried about any of these things, then ultimately, even with Jimmy Butler, the Rockets are not going to win a title in the era of the Warriors. So ultimately, the only reason it makes sense to go after Jimmy Butler or someone of that magnitude, given what it would take to get a deal to the finish line, is if you think these situations are going to resolve themselves. If they don't, then honestly, you're better off, if you're the Rockets, keeping those draft picks so that, you know, either you build the next generation in the team or maybe down the line, there's a star that's a little bit younger that might fit in terms of kind of retinkering, rejuggering around whatever version of James Harden you have in his low 30s. Now, this is all a hypothetical. I want to make clear, I still largely think the Rockets are going to figure it out. 10 games, especially when you factor in the injuries and suspensions, in the grand scheme of things, it's not that huge of a sample size. I do think Chris Paul is playing through some sort of an injury right now to his shooting elbow. We've also seen some brilliant games from him so far this year in LA, in Brooklyn. I think they're going to be fine, and that's why I was in support of a move for Jimmy Butler, because ultimately I do think there's a chance that Butler or someone in that magnitude could close the gap and materially improve your odds at beating the Warriors in a best-of-seven series next May. But if you are significantly concerned about the current Rockets, then I don't think you should view this as a loss. If anything, I think you should look at it as preserving your options moving forward, because we don't know if the Rockets are going to have an opportunity to contend this year. Now, again, that's not my view. I'm just using it to push back, because I've seen a certain segment of the fan base that seems to be in panic mode and looked at Jimmy Butler as the only way to fix it. Now, maybe a week ago, if you were looking at maybe, you know, the spiraling effect, but the Rockets just got off a 3-game winning streak. I don't think they're mentally spiraling. I think their issue right now, they're just physically not good enough. They're 27th in the league in offense. They haven't scored 100 points in 3 games. They barely broke 80 in Oklahoma City. Right now, it's not so much that they're doubting themselves. They're just not very good at putting the ball in the basket. They're not making threes. They have one of the lowest percentages in the league, even their stars near the bucket. And these things need to correct themselves. I don't think they're mentally out of sorts. They just need to get better offensively. Personally, I think with health, with time, they will. But if you don't, there's no reason to be that despondent over not getting Jimmy Butler, because a move of that magnitude only makes sense if the Rockets are actually going to have a chance in May. And if there's some, you know, small silver lining you can take out of it, at least now, since it's probably going to take at least a few weeks before the next major player I would think is available on the trade market, then at least the Rockets will be able to get a better sense for whether this is just an issue of small sample size, what's going on right now, or whether the Rockets aren't as good as they expected to be going into this season. And if that's the case, then yeah, it does impact how willing you should be to move future assets like four future first-round picks or whatever it may be. So in the end, I'm disappointed, because I think Butler certainly he's a top 10, top 15 player. It would have been fun to have him here. And I think an acquisition of that magnitude could ultimately close the gap next May, because by and large, I am still bullish on this basketball team. And the one positive from that, I do think there's still time. Really, they have until the trade deadline in early February to find other options. And based on contracts or standings, I do think they will present themselves. But if you are a lot more pessimistic than me, then I don't think you should be all that devastated about this, because ultimately, if these situations with Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, Clint Capella, and so on and so forth don't rectify themselves, then even Jimmy Butler isn't going to be enough to get you anywhere near the level of the back-to-back defending champion and historically elite Golden State Warriors. It is what it is. So to me, for the Rockets before the trade and now after the trade of Jimmy Butler from Minnesota going to Philadelphia, the key goal is the same. They've got to straighten out the supporting cast outside of James Harden that was so instrumental in them winning 65 games and being a hamstring away a year ago. If they can't do that, Jimmy Butler or no Jimmy Butler, it doesn't matter. And so ultimately, fixing Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, Clint Capella, that was the story before the Jimmy Butler trade, and it's still the story after the Jimmy Butler trade. If they are able to fix themselves, then yes, I do think there are going to be other opportunities down the road, and both from an asset standpoint and a financial standpoint, I think there are some positives you can take from this Butler chase. Even though it didn't end successfully, there are positives you can take from the standpoint of the Rockets' willingness and ability to go to the lengths it takes to potentially get a player of that magnitude. So with that, that's where we'll leave off, because while we do have actual basketball to discuss in the hours ahead, Rockets Spurs Saturday night and Rockets Pacers on Sunday. And of course, on Sunday, we'll have a recap breaking down both of those games. For now, though, this is where we will leave you. If you want any more content, including in-game analysis, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. Show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Also got an email address, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Facebook account, facebook.com/lockedonrockets. Website, lockedonrockets.com. Always that you can access our content, ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, pretty much whatever we can do to improve the experience for you as a Rockets fan or even you, a human being. Don't hesitate to reach out and let me know. Also, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify. If you're not subscribing to this podcast already, please do. That's how you'll get episodes right when they come out before I even have to post them to my Twitter, at Ben Dubose. So subscribe to us and also leave us a 5-star review. That's how you get episodes right when they come out. And that's how we look attractive to potential advertisers and keep the business model working here at Locked On Rockets, the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. To sum up, Rockets did not get Jimmy Butler. Instead, he's going to the Philadelphia 76ers. Some small consolation that at least a top 10 or top 15 player does leave the Western Conference. But ultimately, the Rockets, as far as adding another all-star to the fold, which is something they've been trying to do for some time, well, Daryl Morey, it's back to the drawing board. We'll see what happens in the weeks ahead on that front. For now, it's about the here and now. The Rockets need to win basketball games, starting with tonight in San Antonio. And until then, this is where we will leave you. Thanks as always for listening, and come back soon and listen to our game recaps right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.